From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, give us a call at 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some interesting topics, Zorba?
Yes, we're going to talk about yoga, not just for the young, but for the old, and whether or not it helps falls, keep falls from happening, and it's a very important part, very important thing, especially for people who are older Americans.
I'm listening.
You are listening, that's right. We're both listening, yeah. Tom, both
what
you
else?
And I. Stroke linked to artificial sweeteners. Let's talk about the study, the association of it that's there. Is it cause and effect? It's very important data that you'll want to know about.
And what's our recipe?
Tuna. I love tuna. Tuna with capers, olives, and lemon. It's another way to make tuna. Tuna is sort of my go-to dish, kind of my comfort food when I need comfort food. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we all need comfort food.
Let's go to the phones now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. As we welcome our first caller, a listener in Greenville, Texas. Hi.
Hello. Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
I have a question about, losing weight with RA. I have pretty severe RA in several joints, from tips of my toes to basically my neck. It all hurts. And because of that, I was homebound and couchbound basically about 2 years now.
So you've got severe... How old were you when you developed rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, I'm 29 now. Mm-hmm. So it's been going on for about 2-3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm over a 90 pounds over my ideal weight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm wondering, what can I do?
Oh, sure. So, typical day, how much do you sleep? What do you do for exercise?
I'm running around a 2-year-old.
Uh-huh. 2-year-old.
And that's about it.
2-year-olds,
they're taskmasters, those 2-year-olds, you know? You don't, when you've got a 2-year-old, the 2-year-old is your personal trainer.
Oh, yes. Believe me.
Do you ever, by the way, do you ever have a chance to go to warm water exercise? Is that available in your area at all?
Well, we have a pool exercise, so I guess that would count.
Because one of the things you can do, I just want to mention that with exercise, with rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, or any one of the other arthritises, is that exercise in a pool is a different kind of exercise. Keeps the joints moving. It's not weight-bearing exercise because you're buoyant in the pool, but allows you to do lots of things you could not normally do. And you may want to look into that in your area just from an exercise point of view. Next question. Do you have an activity tracker at all? Like a Fitbit at all? Well, I've got a recommendation for you. I happen to like the Misfit. There's the Fitbit, and I've got the Misfit. And I like the Misfit because entry level is $19.95, and it connects to your smartphone. It tells you how many steps you're getting throughout the day. And sometimes that can be a motivating factor because, like you say, you've got a 2-year-old that's running you around. And the question is, how many steps are you actually taking? It'll give you a little feedback. Because you've got to get at least, if you want to lose weight, you've got to get probably maybe 4,000 to 5,000 steps a day. And although I used to think I did a lot of steps in my office, I didn't. And you want to get an idea of what you're getting, because then you can see how to ramp up those steps, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 steps. That may help your set point for how many calories you need. Now, the next thing is food. Look at the Mediterranean diet. Look it up or get a book, The Mediterranean Diet for Beginners. It's a book I like. It's on Amazon. I don't own stock in it. It's like $10. And then start to look at the calories that you're having and look at a reduction. Just take 3 days, keep a diary, and then look at how many calories you're getting and reduce that by 350 to 500 calories. Just look at that. And look at the low-hanging fruit. Low-hanging fruit can be salad dressing you're using, could be carbohydrates you're eating. But you're home with your child. It's got to be hard because there's food all around.
Yeah, it is. But in the same time, I can cook what I what I desire.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That
what
is true.
I like. It's much easier that way.
Yeah. So I've got a question for you. When did you gain this weight?
I started gaining this weight when I got pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And after that, I really started hurting with all my joints, and I couldn't move. I couldn't walk. So I was sitting basically on a chair.
See, when you exercise, it tends to decrease appetite. I have confidence, since you only got pregnant a few years ago, you have your 2-year-old, that you could go, if you went back to your former eating habits and you looked at that and then you stringently tried to find it, and it takes a lot of work, but it was only 3 years ago that you were eating less, you would return to that weight. Very close to that weight. There's no doubt. There's no doubt about it. But it takes a lot of work. It takes looking at things. And once again, I would look at the med diet, and I would look at fat, and I would eat more fat because I think it's more satisfying. Good fat. Fat basically from fish, fat from nuts, omega-3 fatty acids are really the best fats to eat.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
I can do that.
Yeah, let us know what happens. Start a plan and let us know. We'd really be interested. You've just shared your story that a lot of women have after they're pregnant. The weight just stays on and stays on and stays on.
Appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. We'll be taking our next call in a moment at 800-462-7413. But first, Zorba, yoga. And how yoga can reduce falls among the elderly.
That's right. So it's a big issue. So how do you define elderly, Tom? You know, I always define elderly.
You look at me and say, how do you define elderly? I look in the mirror. That's how I define
elderly. See, I always define elderly as 25 years older than you are today. So I consider the elderly, in my case, to be 95.
I'll buy that,
the elderly. But this is an article out of the University of Wisconsin. Looked at older adults, and they looked at your older adults who took yoga classes.
Yep.
And they looked at falls. Falls are a big, big issue. They're big public health issues. It turns out that if you fall, break your hip, you're over 65, 25% chance you'll be dead in 2 years. 25% from the complications of the fall. You're not breathing hard enough. There are a lot of other issues. And 50% chance that you will be disabled in one or more activity of daily living. So you can't shop, can't do the laundry, something really big. And so looking at ways to prevent falls is important. Wisconsin is number 1 or 2 in falls in the country. And we make lots of jokes like, well, it's because Wisconsinites drink too much. That's not the answer, because Minnesotans drink about as much as Wisconsin.
Why are we?
We don't know. We don't have any idea. In Minnesota, where they drink almost as much as we do or more, I mean, depends on who you are in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Hate to downplay those Minnesotans, but they are the enemy over the border. But anyway, getting back to the issue, they don't fall as much as we do, but their consumption of alcohol is fairly similar. So it's not just that. We don't have a handle on it. But the study showed that people over 65 who took hatha yoga had a 48% drop in the risk of falling, in their actual falls, over a 6-month period. Amazing. In other words, almost a 50% drop in that. And it was 38 participants. They had biweekly classes for 8 weeks. So in other words, they went twice a week, 40 people, twice a week in rural areas, Dodgeville, Platteville, and Monroe, 65 and older. Had to be, the average age was 70%. And it turned out that there were falls. Number of people fell. But if they did hatha yoga, they drop their risk of falling by 50%. It's really, really important. So what does yoga do? Yoga gives you a strong core.
Yeah.
You have a stronger core with yoga. It gives you the ability, when you're a little bit off, to actually get yourself on. Because with yoga, you're doing poses, and you're kind of practicing being off kilter when you're doing it. And so, because you can't think when you're falling, it's got to be reflex.
So
you have to have that reflex with you.
That's really interesting. Kind of amazing.
It's kind of amazing, because one of the things I do as a doctor with Medicare physicals, I talk about falls. I talk about going up on ladders and falls. But there ought to be, I should push a button and I should say, you should go to the yoga class in town. We have one in town. We have one in the senior center. I send people to physical therapy, but do I send any yoga? No. Is there a discount for maybe using certain yoga studios? No. Do we write a prescription for yoga? No. And yet it prevents falls. What's wrong with this picture? Well, what's wrong is it's easier for us as doctors to write prescriptions for pills than it is to write prescriptions for yoga. And that has got to change. In any case, yoga's good. If you're older 65, consider taking a yoga class or a balance class. There was a class recently my wife went to because Penny has mobility issues. The class was Only Leaves Should Fall. I thought it was a great title for a class.
That's fun. I'm glad you said consider taking instead of take.
Not to you, Tom. I would never say that. I would never say that.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, here's a listener with us now in Wind Point, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. This is, my name is Carol, and I love your show. Thank you for your wonderful show.
Thank you.
So I had surgery for ingrown toenails, my big toes, about 25 years ago. And they actually cut out the lateral, the sides of both toes all the way and underneath, underneath the quick.
Mm-hmm. By the way, what did you do for a living? Just a question.
I'm a nurse because I use the word lateral.
Exactly. That's exactly why. That's good. Exactly why you picked it up because you used the word lateral. Only a medical professional would use the word lateral. Please go
on. Yeah, you know, I've been a practicing RN for 41 years and I'm retiring at the end of the year.
Tom loved that.
Yeah. So, it was very painful, but I had ingrown toenails then and that fixed it. Mm-hmm. Now, in the last couple of years, I've had I guess you would call it a fungus, even though I hate that word. I hate even saying it. Mm-hmm. Underneath my big toes, and it caused them to curl and be painful in the toenail.
Awful.
Well, I heard about this using 0.5% peroxide, and I used that for about 9 months or so on both of them. It completely cured one side, but the other side is persistent. So I'm wondering, what do you think I should be doing about that?
Well, there are a couple things. First of all, the fungus gets in there because of trauma, and that's what it is. And, you know, it's got a big fancy name, onychomycosis. It's common as we get older. If people can't get rid of it, I recommend that if you go to a podiatrist, they basically shave down the nail. They Dremel it with a Dremel. I have a number of guys that will Dremel their own nail.
What's a Dremel?
It's an instrument that goes, whirls around. Use it in hobbies.
I cut my dog's nails with that.
So you're a vet on the side or a dog groomer. So you Dremel your dog's nails. So people Dremel them down because toenails take like 4 to 6 months, and that can keep them under control. Things to use. Lamisil is a drug. It works about 80 to 85% of the time. 250 milligrams. You can use the pulse technique 1 week on, 3 weeks off, 3 cycles.
Is that topical?
No, it is not topical. So I'm going to explain the topical in a second. But Lamisil is a pill, works about 80% of the time. You can either take it every single day for 12 weeks, but the pulse technique seems to be just as good. 1 week on, 3 weeks off, and if it fails, then you repeat it again. The other is a topical antifungal, and the name now slips my mind, but your pharmacist would know. It's by prescription only, and you paint it. You know, it is a lacquer. You know, it's like a nail polish that you put on the nail, and it's an antifungal that seeps into it. It also has about an 80% success rate. It's still a name brand drug, so it's more expensive. You'd have to find out what the insurance is for that. And as for alternative remedies, you've discovered they work for some nails and don't work for others, but the prescription memories are pretty much the same. They work for some and don't work for others. But I would try it I would either try the pills. The pills are better than the topical, but I think they both work well. I've got a question. Do you want to get rid of this because of pain or because of vanity?
Both
pain and vanity. That's it. You don't like the way they look, and they hurt you. Well, for the pain, Dremel it down. Although you've got to be careful, and some people would be aghast that I would recommend that. But I would try the topical antifungal. As I said, get a prescription from your doc or Lamisil 250, 1 week on, 3 weeks off, 3 cycles.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. What kind of dog do you have?
Actually, I have a Greyhound and I have a Whippet.
A Greyhound and a Whippet. Whoa. God, they're
yes,
both.
Yes.
So if they get off leash and they decide to run.
You never see them again.
We have an acre and a fence. We have a 5-foot fence.
Uh-huh.
And nobody has told the Greyhound that she can jump over it if she wanted to. So we keep that a secret.
Oh, you keep that a secret from her, right? The Greyhound could easily jump over the 5-foot fence. Was this a rescue Greyhound from one of the tracks?
No, she's a show dog. They're both show dogs, actually.
Oh, they were both show dogs. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I've got a poodle who was a show dog, so I know what that. They're a breed of their own.
They're so smart.
Very smart. He also could go next door to the dogs that bark at him. They're in an invisible fence, but I told him he really can't go over there, so he doesn't do it. He doesn't realize he could just hop over the fence and play with the dogs, but I've kept him from understanding that.
That's good, yes. The secrets we keep from our dogs.
Yes, that exactly it. So good luck. Good luck with getting
Thank
rid of the
so
fungus.
Much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. We Take appreciate care. The call. At 800-462-7413. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's fire off another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener, Pamela, in Pocatello, Idaho. She writes, I was listening to your discussion of whether or not dogs should lick your face and your response
right.
and
That's
your
right.
response that they shouldn't. I'm not saying one way or the other that they should or shouldn't, but I noticed that you didn't cite any data about actual increased transmission of diseases over other groups. So, as an evolutionary biologist, I immediately thought about the fact that dogs and humans have co-evolved
That's
for
right.
millennia.
That's right.
As gross as it
That's
sounds,
right.
could it be that there is actually some health benefit to allowing our dogs to lick us, in that it could present pathogens in a manner that just allows our bodies to tackle pathogens in small quantities and present them to our immune system. Thank you for your wonderful show. You've always been a traveling companion on our road trips, and now that I've lost my husband and I'm learning to road trip with just me and my dogs, you are a comfort on those trips and our weekly drives to go hiking.
Oh, how nice. How nice. And sorry for her loss.
So
now, as for
her?
What I said, yeah. it wasn't licking the face. It was kissing the dog. In other words, licking the dog, having the dog lick you in the mouth. I kind of find that a little bit disgusting. And I don't know if coevolution is really there. Licking the face is just fine. It's kissing the dog where the dog then French kisses you
But you
in
have
your
no
mouth.
Research on that.
I have no research. So indeed, the evolutionary biology Just one, Zorba, Pastor on Your Health, zero.
Did you give pause to something Zorba said on the show? Just post it on our Facebook page or send it to us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook, as Tom said.
More calls to come, as well as our tasty recipe. And today we'll be quacking up with Dr. Zorba, all coming up on Zorba, Pastor on Your Health from PRX. The Public Radio Exchange. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. If you want to talk with Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, tuna with capers olives, and lemon.
So tuna is kind of my go-to dish when, I don't know, comfort or all of a sudden I want something because, you know, I was brought up with tuna. I mean, that was kind of the dish. Do you like tuna?
Tuna's good. Yeah.
Good. Do you eat it very often or kind of intermittently?
I haven't had tuna in a long time, but I do like it.
Yeah. And so, you know, if I'm home and out.
They don't put tuna in TV dinners very often.
No, they don't put tuna in TV dinners. They do not. That's exactly. That's a different story, you know, the tuna stuff. But, you know, there also is a difference in tuna. I mean, you have oil-packed tuna, you have albacore tuna, you have tuna in water, which is the, you know, which is the usual tuna. You also have tuna that is more expensive. Yeah. So for a recipe, I have regular tuna, but I also have tuna in a jar that I found at a number of restaurants that is oil-packed with olive oil, and sometimes it's flavored, and that tuna is delicious.
It sounds good.
It really, really, really makes a difference. So you can use inexpensive tuna if you want to, of one kind or another, but you may also consider spending, I mean, literally, it's like $3.50 for this little jar of tuna. And I bought it once, and I thought, oh, my God, this is really, really good. And I don't get it all the time because I look at it as a treat. But the type of tuna you get can make a difference.
Okay.
Now on to capers.
I'll be honest with you.
Go ahead.
I don't know what a caper is, but I know I don't like them.
You don't like them. You don't like capers. I love capers. Capers are a pickled berry, basically. That's what they are. They're a pickled berry. And they come in different sizes. Sometimes they're called nonpareils, wherever that name came. They're bigger capers and smaller capers. Mm-hmm. There also are expensive capers and they're inexpensive capers. And so if you're shopping in a large grocery store, you may want to look at if you like capers like we do, a large jar of capers that are much, much cheaper than the smaller jars.
Okay.
And then you keep them in the refrigerator. Okay. Obviously, I've not influenced you with capers at all.
And we're out of time for the recipe.
All right,
Moving along.
Okay. Start out with one garlic clove, mince it fine, juice of a half lemon you're also going to have. So one garlic clove, and you're also going to get juice of a half lemon, okay?
Mm-hmm. A garlic clove minced with a juice of a lemon.
That's a juice of a half lemon.
Yeah,
five tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil, and you're going to use some more olive oil later on, another four mm-hmm. tablespoonfuls, but five tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
Five big T extra virgin olive oil.
Mm-hmm. So 20-ounce can of tuna may be in water if you want to use water, which reduces your calories, or you may, like I say, have it in a delicious oil, but olive oil, either one, your tuna of choice.
20 ounces of canned tuna.
That's right. Quarter cup of chopped red onion, and I would chop that finely. I would not leave it in big chunks. Chop mm-hmm. it finely.
Quarter cup chopped red onion.
Half cup of chopped olives.
Half a cup chopped olives.
I'm actually hungry now as I'm actually eating this. Two tablespoonfuls of capers. I would use, in this recipe, I use small capers. I buy both big capers and small capers.
Yeah, I would too. Little T capers.
That's right. You'd make yours so small that they wouldn't be in there. Two tablespoons of minced parsley or basil. And the cheap way to get basil, by the way, is in Asian grocery stores. But a lot of grocery stores now have basil in the produce rack. So two tablespoons and mince it up.
Two big T, minced parsley or basil.
Some butter toast.
Mm-hmm. Toast.
And some butter that you're going to use maybe as a dip. So here's how we make it. In a large bowl, mash the garlic with the back of a spoon, whisk the lemon juice in, 5 tablespoonfuls of olive oil, then combine that with the tuna, onion, olives, capers, and herbs, and then check the salt. Use the salt to taste. Then take some butter toast for sandwiches, or make a dip, pulse the tuna salad and the butter, remember using 10 tablespoonfuls of butter, okay, until it's creamy with the motor running. Slowly add additional olive oil as needed to either taste or to make it the texture that you want to. And then you take that and either use it as a dip with your favorite cracker or you put it on butter toast in a very thin layer. And basically, you've got a tuna caper olive lemon butter type of a thing that you would actually use. It's very different because it doesn't have the texture that you have with tuna.
It actually sounds pretty good.
I'm shocked. I have not heard you say that in a while. It actually sounds a little good as a 10 on the Tom Clark scale. Well,
and
a 9.
And if I want this recipe, I can look at the computer.
You can look at the computer or you can go to your smartphone and you go to zorbapastor.org. You can look at this recipe, other recipe, fun stuff on our website. That's zorbapastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
1-800-462-7413. That's our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, back to the phones we go, welcoming a listener in Madisonville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello there. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I've got two grandsons. One is 4 years, 4 months old. The other one's 1 year, 4 months old. During the summer, their mother does a great job with giving them all sorts of fresh fruits as far as blueberries, strawberries, all those kinds of things. But in general, she just doesn't give them a whole lot of green vegetables, whether it's during the summer or even year-round.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, you hear all sorts of things about vitamins being beneficial as well as not being beneficial. Is there a benefit to her giving either one of the boys or both of the boys vitamins on a daily basis?
Interesting point. And a point of controversy. So there are a number of issues with vitamins. First of all, people who say, I don't eat well enough, I'm going to take a vitamin, that's bogus. Because what happens is there's a lot of stuff that are not in vitamins. Vitamins are industrialized, manufactured products. Now, they're important because we got rid of vitamin deficiencies like beriberi, pellagra, and scurvy by basically putting vitamins in things like white bread. White bread uses enriched flour where the vitamins are. And by doing that, and in cereal, we got rid of all the vitamin diseases that used to plague society, industrialized society, before the 1920s. So that was a major step forward. But now that we've got all these enriched foods around, the question is, should we take a multivitamin? Well, you can take a multivitamin, and it's okay for kids to take it, but it's not an excuse not to feed them the right stuff.
Sure.
So I think it's okay to give a child a vitamin, but I think giving a child a vitamin along with the right food is kind of the way to do it. And that's where I'm kind of on. And I go back and forth on this. The editorial in the Annals of Internal Medicine, looking at adult vitamin supplementation, which is really where it's come from, has said we have the most expensive urine in the world because we have so many vitamins that we take and supplements that automatically go in the urine. We're talking about maybe a $5 billion a year industry. But there's nothing wrong with kids' vitamins, the gummy bears. They're cheap. They're inexpensive. But encouraging the kids to eat green stuff is really good because that may encourage them to eat green stuff when they're adults. And that's part of the issue. Picking a green vegetable like string beans, lettuce, maybe little you know, broccoli that looks like little trees, and encouraging kids to eat that, I think, is important. So how would they take your suggestion, the family, of giving them a vitamin? What would they say?
I think my daughter would be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she has any problems with giving them the vitamin if it's worthwhile. I guess my question is, as you said, we've got the most expensive urine in the world.
Right.
And they'll eat the green vegetables. They love them. Mm-hmm. When she gets around to giving it to them.
Yeah,
it's not that they don't like them.
I would stick with that. I look at the vitamins as an excuse for not giving green vegetables, and also not teaching them the things that you learn as a child clearly make a difference on how you eat as an adult. So it's a learning experience. We read to our kids. We take our kids on enrichment experiences. Eating right is part of an enrichment experience. So, you know, one of the gifts that you might give, you know, in the holidays is giving them something from a CSA, you know, community-supported, farms that actually give them green vegetables in the summer. That might be a wonderful gift to the kids so that they then have green vegetables that they have to eat. It's just an example of something to do. I would encourage that, I think, more than vitamins. I think we do not see vitamin deficiencies except in people who limit their children, like people on macrobiotic diets, which was a crazy diet. Those children develop scurvy. And so people who are on strange diets get the vitamin deficiencies, but not regular Americans. So that's what
I
would do. Food is best.
Great. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks so much for the call. That's 800-462-7413. Now Zorba, a listener with us in Newcastle, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello there.
How can we help?
I would like to get the benefit of Dr. Zorba's opinion about post-polio syndrome, and is it real? Does he have knowledge that he might share with me?
Well, first of all, it is real. Did you have polio?
I did.
How old are you now?
I am 72.
72. So you got how old were you when you got polio?
Seven.
Seven. And tell me a little bit about it.
I woke up one night when I was 7. I hollered at my mother that I needed to go to the restroom. Mm-hmm. She said, okay. And I said, but I can't move. And that's how I started. Mm-hmm. And I was paralyzed from the waist down. I took tons of medicine, as I remember, and right. I got treated like a princess.
Mm-hmm. You got treated. It was must have been very, very, very frightening. So post-polio syndrome, what happens is, as we get older, we get weaker. I never had polio. I'm not as strong as I was when I was younger. And when you look at strength, it's interesting. You know, when you look at little baby, I examined babies in my office. And you look at those little legs and those little arms. It's amazing how strong they are. You know what I mean? When you pull on a baby, how strong they are when they lift up. Mm-hmm. And you go, look at this little arm. How they're really strong. Well, the answer is they are really strong because these muscles are really strong. I mean, they're not bodybuilders. They've just been hanging out in the womb and nursing when they get out of the womb. They're really strong. Where do these muscles come? They're babies. They're strong. Well, as we get older, we are weak. So we lose muscle. We lose 1% of our muscles every single year, no matter what we do. And we become fatter and fatter. More body, it's replaced by fat. As we lose muscle, you may lose muscle too, but you have less muscle to lose. In other words, post-polio syndrome, we have no way of evaluating how much muscle was actually destroyed 50 years later. In other words, so the syndrome is because there's less muscle. And whether or not some of these cells are dying later is a big question. We know, for instance, when it comes to chickenpox, that 50, 60 years later, you can get herpes zoster. So there's a consequence to chickenpox years later. Polio is a virus. I believe there's no doubt post-polio syndrome is real. How real it is and how does it affect people, difficult to say because strength is difficult to evaluate. Do you feel that you have it?
Well, I feel like I'm the most blessed woman in the world because I have always had very strong legs. Mm-hmm. I did about anything I wanted to do. But as I got older, one of the things, and I have three daughters who are internet investigators, and every once in a while, one of them will call me and say, I know what you have. You have post-polio syndrome. They've been telling me that for years. I listen to your program all the time, and I really wanted to know the benefit of, I wanted to know just how you felt about it. And also, I would like to know if, in your experience, could that cause neuropathy?
You know, polio affected the nerves that affected the muscle cells in the body. Neuropathy is a completely different issue. So it affected, the cells that essentially produced motor function. To my knowledge, affected the cells that actually produced, it essentially work in modulating pain and discomfort. So if you have neuropathy, you have to look somewhere else. And neuropathy is really, really common.
The reason I ask that is because I seem to have problem with muscle control right now.
Yeah, that could be from post-polio syndrome. That's exactly what that could be.
One
way to fully look at it is going to a neurologist, getting a full evaluation. But the real question is, how do you treat it? And often, the way it's treated is with strengthening exercises defined by a good physical therapist and doing them every day. Because it's taking the muscle mass that you have that's working properly, just like a bodybuilder, and making it work better. When you were working, what'd you do for a living?
I owned art galleries.
So you knew how to get stuff up. You knew how to move stuff. You knew how to you knew how to organize things. Use that part of your brain to actually get yourself onto an exercise program and get onto the right one through PT.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
You are most welcome.
We really appreciate the call. Thank you. And before the break now, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pester on Your Health inbox and tackle a quick listener email. This one came to us from a listener named Aaron. Dear Dr. Zorba, I love the idea of the Mediterranean diet, but it relies heavily on nuts. I don't have a problem with nuts, but my daughter is allergic to tree nuts and peanuts to the degree that we don't have nuts in the house. Can you suggest any workarounds that would allow the benefits of the Mediterranean diet without the nuts?
Olive oil. That's the answer. Olive oil works really well. You don't need to do nuts. If you're allergic to nuts, stay away from them. And peanuts are different. They're not a nut. They're a legume. And obviously, she has multiple allergies. So a couple things. First of all, olive oil, Mediterranean diet, and stay away from nuts. That will be just fine. Fish twice a week, plentiful fruits and vegetables, and stay away from the nuts. Mm-hmm. The peanut allergy is a very specific allergy that can be very serious. You obviously have to stay away from that. And I think that would be okay. Sometimes, though, you can actually find a nut that your child can enjoy and like, but I think hitting the olive oil is the best way to go.
Is the health question driving you nuts? Zorba's happy to shelp. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls coming up, as well as another interesting topic, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, interesting, stroke and dementia risk and artificial sweeteners.
That's right. So I think this is an important study, and I don't want to overblow it. I want to give you a good perspective on it. It's from the Nurses' Health Study, so it's a study of mostly women. There were not as many men in the Nurses' Health Study. And it was a 28-year follow-up of women that's been going on, 22 years for the men in the study. Initially, women were the ones allowed in, then men were allowed in. And they looked over a period of time at people who, the women and the men, the nurses, who drank artificial sweetener drinks, things that were with Splenda, NutraSweet, which is aspartame, or the new kid on the block, which is Truvia, which is stevia. And what they wanted to see is there a link? First of all, it's not cause and effect. Is there a link? And people who drank artificially sweetened drinks had three times the risk of stroke and a major increase in dementia versus the nurses in the study who did not drink any artificial drinks. And the editorial on this, kind of interesting. It's kind of scary, isn't it? You know, to think about this.
Yeah.
Very scary. Now, for years, I've talked about NutraSweet being the most studied artificial sweetener, Splenda coming second, and Stevia coming third. And these really have been studied. The FDA have said that they're safe. But this is kind of pause to question this, whether or not it's there.
What's the difference between a study and a link?
The link is it's an association. We can't see cause and effect. We just know from the study people who drink artificial drinks have a higher risk of stroke and dementia. So is it because they smoke? Well, didn't Peter be smoking? Is it because they're overweight? Well, not necessarily, but people who drink artificial drinks are often overweight. Is there something else that's going on here? So it doesn't mean that the artificially flavored drinks is causing the stroke, but it's people who drink artificial drinks, artificially flavored drinks, just may be more at risk for stroke and heart attacks. But the real question is, do people lose weight on it? And the answer is no. The more diet drinks we've been drinking, the fatter we have become as a society.
Yeah, but sugar isn't so good for us, and I think that's one reason why a lot of people have these.
Oh, that is exactly. Well, sugar is not good for us, but the other issue is it may be that artificially flavored drinks stimulate the appetite to eat food elsewhere, and there's some reasonable research to show that. So it may be that when you drink your Diet Coke, you actually start to get your calories somewhere else. I think this tells us one thing. It says that anything artificial runs a risk. We don't know what it is. If you're drinking a sweetened soft drink that's diet, how about going to water or seltzer water and giving that up or reducing the amount that you're drinking? And finally, if you're going to have something to drink, it should be something refreshing like water or seltzer water that's pure and clear and clean.
800-462-7413, the number if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I've lost my taster. Last November, I got a typical cold with a cough and a sore throat and nasal congestion, and it lasted for pretty much a couple of months. I am 57 years old and basically good health, and then the cold ran its course, and I got another one. And since then, that cold came without any sore throat symptoms. It had a cough, but it came pretty much without any cold sore throat symptoms and left me with some nasal congestion. Currently, I feel very well.
Mm-hmm.
My nasal system seems somewhat dry, perhaps, but I don't feel like I have a cold. But I can barely taste food.
Oh, how awful is that?
It's terrible. Very odd.
It is terrible.
I like to put the groceries away. It hasn't changed my appetite at all.
our caller said he lost his taster. I thought maybe he had a hired person.
His taster.
And the person moved away.
That's what it was. You were a king, and you lost your taster that tastes your food beforehand. That's right.
The king has lost his taster, but I am that king.
The king has lost his taster.
Yeah.
So, did it happen suddenly? So how many months into your taste loss are we at this point?
I am probably 2 months without being able to taste.
Okay, two months. Right.
I know that something is sweet. I know mm-hmm. that something is salty. Mm-hmm. I know that something is bitter, fatty.
A couple of things I would recommend. First of all, you can now get Flonase over the counter. Flonase, F-L-O-N-A-S-E. I would do that right away. Two squirts in the morning, two squirts in the evening in each nostril. I do that for a month and see what happens. You may just still have some inflammation in the back of your nose, and you may just have to get rid of that. There may be swelling back there that you are unaware of, but it's keeping basically the odors from going back in the upper part of the turbinates, which would then make you taste things. This is unfortunately not an uncommon thing after a cold when you're older. And for some people, it doesn't come back. But for most people, it does come back. But it takes some time. So I just mentioned that because, you know, there is a risk it won't come back. And for some people, we don't know exactly why they're destroyed. But I would try Flonase. I would do that. That surprisingly does a good job, especially since the cold is gone.
That would be interesting if it didn't come back.
It's very odd and very difficult. And actually, it can be very dangerous if it doesn't come back, because when we look at food and we taste food, we have to taste it and see whether or not, you know, it's spoiled or not. You know, you open it up in your refrigerator and you have to know that. But for most people, they may get some or all of it back, especially with a little help from some steroid spray. So get the Flonase, see what that does.
Well, I thank you very kindly.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Now, Zorba, before our next call, time again to trudge through the muddy waters of medical quackery. Let's fire up another segment of Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, tell us about Dr. Carter Moffat and his device from the 1880s.
That's right.
Called the ammoniaphone.
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 Ammoniaphone. Actually, it could be called ammoniaphone because he made a lot of money when he used the ammoniaphone. So I think that's what it was. So this is the famous Dr. Carter, or he called himself the famous Dr. Carter, the ammoniaphone. So it was a slender metal tube, 25 inches in length, decorated with handles and a push button at each end. You unscrewed the center cap with a couple of turns, and then a wick-like material in the middle that was soaked with, get this, hydrogen peroxide, ammonia, and peppermint oil. And these ingredients don't sound very appealing, but Dr. Carter, the famous Dr. Carter, described the vapor like Italianized air. He thought that this is what the air smelled like in Italy. Really, the air would smell like hydrogen peroxide, ammonia, and peppermint oil. And then he said this Italianized air was wonderful. If you look at the advertisement, it was great. It was should be used by vocalists, clergymen, public speakers, parliamentary men, readers, reciters, lecturers, leaders of psalmodry, whatever that is, leaders of psalmodry, schoolmasters, amateurs, church choirs, barristers, and all persons who have their voices professionally desiring to have improvement. You will have a powerful, melodious, extraordinary voice with extraordinary clearness and range. Well, let's just say the ammonia phone was just wonderful. Cost, of course, lots of money. I can't tell you exactly what it was in today's dollars, but it was sold to the medical battery company after Dr. Carter finally made
his
What's
the medical battery
company? Who knows what the medical battery company is? Medical battery company, which then promptly went bankrupt afterwards because it didn't really work. Now, at one particular party, several guests present took long whiffs from the ammonia phone but discovered no obvious change in their voice or tone, and they thought the experiment had to be basically improved and done over and over time. But after a while, the singers, the barristers, the clergymen discovered the ammonia phone did not really smell like Italianized air and really didn't do anything for them. And so, quack, 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 by 1900, it bit the dust. But Dr. Carter Moffat became a rich man.
I can imagine. This is the sort of thing that can kind of play with your brain.
Of course, you're a singer.
You do this and think,
you take the
ammonia
phone.
Getting better.
You said, I'm whiffing in some Italianized air so I can belt out that song when I'm doing the opera.
Power of suggestion.
You bet. It works every time.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you happen to have an ammonia phone in your basement, please send it to us because we want to see it.
Back to the phones we go now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. It's so nice to be on your show.
Yeah, thanks for calling. How can we help?
Well, I have what I think is a very rare allergy. I'm allergic to black pepper. And it's gets worse because nowadays everybody in restaurants really puts black pepper in all of their food.
Pepper is pretty common. You like pepper, Tom, don't you?
Oh yeah.
You put pepper in everything like that. So you're allergic. What kind of response do you get to pepper?
Well, if I have a reaction, I start sneezing really hard and coughing, and I have a hard time catching my breath.
Oh wow!
And just drink water, and that helps, and I always carry Benadryl with me.
Oh, that's terrible.
But I always know if I'm going to have a reaction.
Uh-huh. What kind of food do you like, by the way? If you like Cajun food, that would be awful. Do you like hot food?
No, I do not. I have something of a reaction to hot spices also.
Okay. So, in other words, so you like 1955 comfort food. It's not too spicy. 1955. Comfort food. You know, capsaicin is a common ingredient in many, many hot and spicy things, and that I don't know if capsaicin is exactly what's in black pepper. I haven't looked up what's in black pepper, you know, in and of itself, but you probably are having an allergic reaction to that, and it's a problem when you go out there. You're right, there are only certain restaurants. Have you thought about using a non-sedating antihistamine before you go out to eat, such as Allegra, a Claritin, anything of that nature, you know, something that's not going to put you to sleep?
Well, I take something every morning. I have really bad allergies. Uh-huh.
What do you take in the morning? Do you remember the name of it?
It's Zyrtec.
Zyrtec. Okay, so Zyrtec is good. It's very good. Does that help you at all with your, you know, when you go out to eat? I mean, I can see it's a restaurant problem.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I take it at night before I go to bed, mm-hmm. and then I take another, let's say, Claritin in the morning, actually.
Oh, okay. So you have significant allergies if you're taking Zyrtec and you're taking Claritin. I think, actually, the best advice I could give you is choosing your restaurant. You know, going out with your friends. I mean, that's about all that's left because you've got this weird, you know, this weird reaction. What kind of food do you like?
I actually am very adventurous when it comes to food. I like a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Here in Oklahoma, though, there is a lot of Spanish, Mexican.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. And it's very difficult sometimes to avoid chilies.
I've been to Oklahoma City, and you guys have some of the best barbecue I've ever tasted. And I remember being in a hotel. I was speaking at the University of Oklahoma, and I went to the guy at the hotel, and I said, "Where's the barbecue?" He said, "Go outside and smell the air and follow your nose." I could smell about two blocks away. There was a little barbecue shack, and I had some of the best ribs and brisket I have ever tasted. tasted. I ate so much that I almost had an upset stomach, and I went back the next day for more. And my clothes smelled of barbecue after I walked out of the restaurant. That's what I remember.
Oh, yeah.
It coats the clothing, but boy, is it good. And you know what? It's not heart healthy.
No, not a bit.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
Well, thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Before we head out now, Zorba, the show wouldn't be complete without a nod to your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police.
I'm just trying to picture what they would look like if the Grammar Police were a squadron lined up. What they would look like? I've got an image in my brain, but I've got to figure out somebody to like.
I'll bring in the badge next time.
Thank you, thank you.
The following email came to us from a listener, Brian, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I very much enjoy listening to you and your Grammar Police segment. I actually never thought I would become an officer, but you made it too hard to resist. The other day, in wrapping up the Grammar Police segment, you said that people can paste offenses on Facebook. I would normally let this slide, but since you were still in the segment to correct you on your misspeaks, I could not let this pass. You post things on Facebook. You paste things like wallpaper. If you were to paste things on Facebook, you would ruin your computer. I would urge you to avoid misspeaks inside the Grammar Police segment, similar to why you should avoid speeding while passing an actual police officer. It would keep rookie officers like me from catching you in the act. I still love your show and all the great things you do for my health."
Thank you very much. I will stay tuned and make sure I correct my misspeaks.
Join the ever-growing Grammar Police by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidman. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1118Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.